Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
I'm your host, Becky Noble. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio, PGIF. That is the, well, it's always the main theme here on Conservative Cauldron Radio on Friday nights, TGIF. The week is done, my people, and the weekend is here, and we are ready for it. That, of course, was just a little excerpt from Dr. Martin Luther King's famous I Have a Dream speech, and we celebrated Dr. King's birthday just this past Monday. And we celebrated Dr. King's birthday by celebrating not just the birth of a man, but the ideas that he espoused and the concepts and the ideals of freedom for everyone, regardless of who you are, what race, religion, anything. We celebrated Dr. King. We celebrated Dr. King basically all week long here at Conservative Cauldron, and the reason I say that is because I am jam-packed tonight. I am so jam-packed with, I have to pay a little homage to the great Rush Limbaugh here because I have stacks of stuff. Yes, my friends, yes, people, I have stacks of stuff. It's taken me a while to get here, but by God, I'm here with stacks of stuff. And the stacks of stuff that I have here, the things that are in the stack of stuff, is that as I looked at everything tonight, as I was preparing for the show tonight, I looked at everything that I had printed out and looked at all of the things that I wanted to talk about and discuss tonight, and there was a theme. There was a theme running through all the things here that I have sitting here in front of me. And I realized that the theme of these things is really at the heart of what Dr. King promoted and what he believed in and what he died for. And that was freedom. Freedom to live your life, freedom to go where you want to go, freedom to be what and who you want to be, freedom to live your life, regardless of what color you are, what your religious persuasion is, what your race, creed, color, you name it. And, you know, I'm just going to I'm going to jump into it. The first thing maybe is not maybe, well, you know, maybe it's along those lines and maybe it's not. But as I get into things here, you're going to see that it's a lot of these things have taken place this week, and it's really ironic that the fact that they have the week that we would celebrate the life and the legacy of Dr. King. I'm sure everybody has heard by now about the interview that President Obama did for The New Yorker. It was a rather lengthy interview. I went to print it out the other night, and by God, it was 18 pages long. And I thought to myself, you know, I have a life. I have things to do, and I can't be printing out 18 pages of stuff off of my printer because, you know, A, let's face it, ink is expensive, and B, who's got time to read 18 pages of stuff that Barack Obama has said to some New Yorker reporter? But I do have a few highlights here. The good folks at the Blaze were kind enough to sift through the whole lengthy thing here, the whole experience that is the Barack Obama interview from The New Yorker. He was interviewed by David Remnick of The New Yorker, and there's a few highlights here that I have here. First of all, President Obama thinks that the public may be over him. And what he means by that is that his quote here is, well, look, we live in a very fast-moving culture, and by definition, the President of the United States is overexposed, and it is natural after 6-7 years of me being on the national stage that people start wanting to see, is there somebody else out there who can give me that spark of inspiration or excitement? I don't spend too much time worrying about that. Well, you know, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that the president does not spend a whole lot of time worrying about it. When you go into politics, I don't think that you can spend a whole lot of time worrying about the nasty, rotten things that people are going to say about you because, A, it's going to happen, and, B, if you spend all day thinking about it, you're not going to do too much else. And I'm sure that you know, when he says that the public may be over him, my first thought to that was, I'm sure that there are some people who are over it. I think that we were all, you know, I think that we were all very taken by the first black president thing. And again, the week that we celebrate the birthday of Dr. King, that was a great thing. It was a great thing for our nation. I wrote about it over at Conservative Cauldron blog. That we reaffirmed the evolution of ourselves and who we were as a people. And the other thing I thought about this was that I'm sure that the people who are the long-term unemployed, the people who've been out of work for 6 months, a year and a half, 2 years even, I'm sure that those people are pretty much over him too. He also said, too, he addressed his African-American critics. And I think that when you hear this, I think that this is one of the most it's one of the most telling statements that I've heard coming from President Obama himself. And I think that it really it gives insight into how he thinks and how he has arrived at a lot of his beliefs and a lot of his ideology. Again, this is he is commenting on his black critics, and this is the president, and he says, there have been times where some thoughtful and sometimes not so thoughtful African-American commentators have gotten on both Michelle and me, suggesting that we are not addressing enough sort of institutional barriers and racism, and we're engaging in sort of up by the bootstraps Booker T. Washington messages that let the larger society off the hook. And I'm going to stop right there because there's more to this quote. But think about what he's saying here for a minute. He's saying that his critics are saying that he and Michelle are not addressing more issues, I guess, that the Black community would like for them to address, and that they're suggesting that they're not addressing classic institutional racism, and that they're addressing more raise yourself up by your own bootstraps Booker T. Washington messages. And also when he says that he says that lets the larger society off the hook. Think about that for just a minute. A raise yourself up by your own bootstraps is a very conservative mentality, and it's something that we as conservatives, that a lot of us truly, truly believe in, because we've seen it happen to friends and family members and people in our own lives, and we've seen it happen to ourselves. And the fact that the way that he describes that, first of all, is a Booker T. Washington message. You know, maybe that's not just a Booker T. Washington message. That's an American message. First of all, that's how America was formed. That's how America came to be, by people coming here with nothing and pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps. But the fact that he finishes off this quote and says that this sort of message lets the larger society off the hook. So what that's telling me, that this whole quote just jumped out at me, and what that says to me is that if you have that mentality, if you have that rugged, individualistic, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps mentality, that in some way you're letting society as a whole off the hook for people who perhaps don't have that mentality. That's an amazing quote to me. It's really, really amazing quote. And like I said, I think it gives a real insight to who Barack Obama is and what his true ideology is and maybe even where he's arrived at that. But the other part of this quote was also surprising too. The end of this quote is, he says here, there's no contradiction to say that there are issues of personal responsibility that have to be addressed, while still acknowledging that some of the specific pathologies in the African-American community are a direct result of our history. So a guy who is such a big government liberal that he would even, and then maybe this whole quote in itself, if you look at the whole thing in its entirety, maybe it's really a contradiction of itself, because when he says, he really does acknowledge some personal responsibility here, and that he also acknowledges that a lot of the problems in the Black community are of their own doing and of their own making, and that there is, that he's maybe suggesting that there is not enough personal responsibility. So I also found that very interesting as well. There's another quote here. They of course, who's not going to ask the first Black president about race, you know, on a daily basis, ad nauseum. And I'm sure this is the quote that everyone has been hearing about all week and talking about all week. He says, there's no doubt that there's some folks who just really dislike me because they don't like the idea of a Black president. Now, the flip side of it is there are some Black folks and maybe some white folks who really like me and give me the benefit of the doubt precisely because I'm a Black president. And, you know, my response to that would be, you think? All one has to do is turn on one of the cable TV channels that are not Fox News or look at a newspaper or look at any of the mainstream media, and those people are completely giving him a pass. I mean, these are the same people, the people that he's talking about, that are giving him the benefit of the doubt, and he's using that phrase, I guess, maybe because maybe that's the best one he can think of to use at the time. It's not only the benefit of the doubt, it's a pass, because you don't hear the mainstream media and you don't hear those other cable news channels talking about Benghazi. You don't hear them talking about Fast and Furious. You don't hear them talking about the IRS. And you don't hear them talking about how the IRS is still today targeting conservative groups. And I'm going to get to that a little bit later. So you're damn right he's getting a pass. And he knows. I think just by him making this statement that there are some people, black and white, who are giving him a pass because he's the first black president, he knows it. He knows that the media is throwing him softballs on a daily basis. He knows that Chris Matthews and the rest of the gang are still enamored. You know, they all still have thrills going up and down their legs, you know, and he knows that is only going to be a benefit to him. So, like I said, this whole thing is 18 pages long. The other thing I had here, too, was that he was asked, I guess, about probably the latest ongoing possible legalization of marijuana. And it says here that Obama doesn't think pot is any worse than alcohol. And his quote here is he says, as has been well documented, I smoked pot as a kid, and I view it as a bad habit and a vice, not very different from the cigarettes that I smoked as a young person up through a big chunk of my adult life. I don't think it is more dangerous than alcohol. And, you know, I heard somebody say just this evening, and I really hadn't thought of it until now, is that when you take that statement, I don't think that pot is any worse than alcohol, okay? This is a man who is the father of two daughters, one of them a teenager right now, one of them soon to be a teenager. That's a very pivotal time of your life, as we all remember. And I heard somebody ask the question, I don't remember who it was, but I heard someone ask the question, as a parent, would he be espousing this view to his children? Would he, when the time comes, and I'm going to go on the assumption, you know what, let's, for just a split second here, for just a nanosecond, let's give the Obamas the benefit of the doubt, and let's say that they sit down, even though these are kids who go to a very private school with heavy security, and, you know, they're not going to your neighborhood public school. But let's say that the Obamas sit down with their girls, and they talk to them about drugs and alcohol like any responsible parent should. I don't think that he's going to make that statement to them. I think that he's probably not going to he's not going to say he doesn't think one is worse than the other. What he's going to say, what most parents are going to say, is don't do it. So I think it's kind of it's a little bit hypocritical, but you know, that's no surprise here when we when we talk about the Obamas, usually hypocrisy is going to rear its ugly head. But it was a very interesting interview. There's, like I said, there's a lot more to it. And but just some of these few little paragraphs here, these few little tidbits, you know, are very telling. They're very very insightful, I think, into the president. Another thing that happened this week, and again, like I said, I think I feel like that there's a theme here running through a good portion of the show tonight, and that is being the week that we celebrate the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, that some of these things that I'm going to talk about tonight took place. And one of these things, this was on Tuesday, Senator Tim Scott of North Carolina, until Cory Booker of New Jersey was recently sworn in as the second African-American senator in the United States Senate. Senator Tim Scott was the only African-American senator, and he is a Republican. And here's another thing that really is going to make you say, did I hear what I just think I heard? That, he caught a little flack from the president of the North Carolina NAACP this week. Again, keep in mind, the week we're celebrating the birthday of Dr. King, the Reverend William Barber. Now, again, let's take that whole name in. The Reverend William Barber. Again, he is the president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP. He called Senator Tim Scott, quote, a ventriloquist dummy for the Tea Party in a Martin Luther King, in a Martin Luther King Day speech on Monday. There was some other loveliness that Reverend Barber had to say about Senator Scott. And Senator Scott was on with Megyn Kelly that night discussing this. And this clip I'm going to play, it's a little bit lengthy, but it says what you need to hear.
Breaking tonight in a Kelly File exclusive. New fallout after an influential leader in the NAACP slams the only African-American Republican currently serving in the U.S. Senate. Reverend William Barber saying this about South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, quote, a ventriloquist can always find a good dummy. And the extreme right wing down here in South Carolina finds a black guy to be senator and claims he's the first black senator since Reconstruction. And then he goes to Washington, D.C. and articulates the agenda of the Tea Party. Now in a Kelly File exclusive, Senator Scott is here to respond. Senator, good of you to be here, and I just want to tell you that the NAACP has responded to us in part on these comments just tonight before we came to air. I want to read you in part how they have responded. There is no apology. I'll start with that. They say, okay, Speaking of Dr. Martin Luther King, that Dr. King emphasized love and justice rather than extremism. Unless we stand for justice, we cannot claim allegiance to or pay homage to Dr. King, period. In a state such as South Carolina, politicians, whether they be black or white, should not be echoing the position of the far right. So there you have it. You should not be echoing that position, and the NAACP has pronounced it as such. Your thoughts?
Pretty remarkable and absolutely ridiculous. Here's what we should be thinking about, Megan. Think about the fact that since the last 5.5 years, we've seen 7 million more Americans fall into poverty. Instead of looking for an agenda of opportunity, what we're hearing is baseless rhetoric about the same old things that have not worked so far. And so for him to attack me, it's as if you have conservative principles, conservative ideas that actually work, why bother to even try those? We've had a 50-year war led by the government on poverty, and it hasn't taken those who are living in poverty out. As you walk through the restaurants, if you ride the local bus, we find people that are trapped and stuck in poverty.
That's the fault of the far right, and that's why they're going after you.
Megan,
with the name calling, that you're a dummy, that you're a ventriloquist dummy because you believe in conservative positions.
Well, I did almost flunk out of high school, so I certainly understand why people would have some kind of opinion that suggests that we're not as smart on the right. But here's what happened when you almost flunk out of high school. You meet a mentor, Chick-fil-A guy, who teaches that you can think out of your way out of poverty, that in fact the best and brightest opportunities aren't found by looking for the government to bring it to you, but it's found by looking in the mirror and blaming yourself if you don't succeed. If you've been given the God-given talents and skills to work, and if you do so, this country rewards you with amazing opportunity, outstanding success, and what we should be preaching all over the country. I spoke at 2 HBCUs today. We should be preaching the fact that in this country, conservatism, free markets, and capitalism produces greater success, easier results than the government could ever do.
I'm short on time, but I want to ask you, NAACP seems to stand up for the rights of African Americans, but only liberal ones?
Well, that's the key. We're not talking any longer about standing up for the rights of a racial minority. We're now talking about finding a way to have a conversation about philosophical bigotry. This is a brand spanking new day because there is a major threat coming from the right, and it's not moving further to the right. It's actually having a conversation where we embrace people who are in need and in trouble, and we show people, as I was shown, the path forward using basic common sense principles that govern the actual economy. And that's where you create a job, you make more money, you make a profit, you can use that profit to create wealth. These are basic, simple principles that are taught every single day in the workforce. And
we haven't seen that conversation. I haven't seen any apology. In fact, this Reverend was on CNN earlier. He did not apologize. The NAACP doubled down. Senator Scott, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Again, this incident has occurred on the same week that we are celebrating the life and the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I just, for someone, first of all, who calls himself a reverend, to make an attack like this on an African-American senator simply because that he disagrees philosophically with him. It's just, I find that, this is something, too, also that I wrote also at Conservative Cauldron blog, isn't part of Dr. King's dream to be able to think for oneself, to come to one's own conclusions, to look at all the facts and all of the evidence on whatever topic, whatever subject it may be, and come to your own conclusion and come to your own thoughts about it? Isn't that part of what freedom and liberty is all about? I found it just extremely jaw-dropping and really incredible that this week of all weeks that something like this would happen. And again, along the same lines of freedom and liberty and free speech, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo made some few comments this week too about who he believes is welcome and not so welcome in the great state of New York.
Their problem is not me and the Democrats. Their problem is themselves. Who are they? Are they these extreme conservatives who are right to life, pro-assault weapon, anti-gay? Is that who they are? Because if that's who they are, and if they are the extreme conservatives, they have no place in the state of New York. Because that's not who New Yorkers are. If they're moderate Republicans, like in the Senate right now.
Governor Cuomo is saying here that if you are pro-life, if you are pro-Second Amendment, if you happen to belong to a Tea Party group, and you happen to live in New York, well, apparently you're not New Yorker enough to live in New York. And it's just, you know, think about for a minute if a Republican governor, and, you know, Republican governors are make up the majority of governors in the nation right now. And what if a Republican governor had said something like this? What if a Republican governor had said, well, I do not want pro-choice. I do not want gun control advocates. I do not want anyone like that living in my state because that's not who we are. I mean, the screeching and the cackling and the bemoaning and the just the falling over and losing our minds on that the left would undertake. If a Republican governor had said something like that, just simply boggles the mind. And I only have a couple minutes here. I'm going to just begin to get into this, and we'll talk a little bit on the other side of the break. Apparently, the IRS has not learned its lesson either. They are still up to their old tricks and their old and the basic jackassery that is the IRS. Conservative author and filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza is being investigated by the IRS for allegedly violating campaign finance laws. And basically what is going on here is that Dinesh D'Souza is the writer of the film 2016, Obama's America. And for those of you who did not see it, it was an extremely in-depth look into the life of President Barack Obama, his life, you know, way prior to becoming president, his life in Chicago, his early political beginnings, and even as far back as things that his father, who was also kind of an activist in his own right in Kenya, things that he was involved in and people that he was involved with. And for the short time that he was involved in Barack Obama's life, the influence that he had on him. But anyway, I'm going to get into this a little bit more when we come back from the break. I'm going to take a break here. And we're going to talk about not only Dinesh D'Souza, but Hollywood conservatives who apparently are being targeted simply for what they believe and for what they don't believe. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. I want to thank everybody for hanging out and chilling out tonight. I'll be back in just a second.
somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan. Flashing through the sandbar, talking by the campfire. It's the simple things in life, like
listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble, TGIF, for the love of Pete. It is finally Friday, folks. We have finally made it through another week. I know it was iffy there for a while. It was for me. But here we are. The weekend is here, and we are ready for it, people. So we've been talking about all kinds of things tonight. We were talking about the New Yorker interview with the president. We're talking about North Carolina Senator Tim Scott being attacked by a reverend, if you can believe that, from the NAACP, on the very week that we celebrate the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King. Kind of ironic, isn't it? Also, just yesterday today, conservative filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza has been being investigated by federal authorities for some campaign donation violations. At least that is the that is the accusation here. What feds are saying is that D'Souza he contributed $20,000 to Wendy Long, who ran in 2012 for the U.S. Senate. In the seat that was vacated by former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and she was going to run against Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who who took that seat over when Mrs. Clinton became Secretary of State. Wendy Long lost that race. Again, like I said, D'Souza, he donated $20,000 to her campaign. And what the feds are alleging is that that the money did not go exactly where it was supposed to go. And Gerald Mullen, who is a co-producer of 2016, the movie, he says that this is absolutely politically motivated. And it also here, this is from the Hollywood Reporter. It says, D'Souza first learned he was being investigated in the middle of 2013, several months after 2016 had earned $33 million at the box office and became the second most popular political documentary in U.S. history. The film includes an interview with Obama's half-brother, George Obama, who was mildly critical of his half-brother. Now, this is – George Obama is the half-brother who I believe still lives in Kenya. This guy lives in a hut, and he lives on like a dollar a day or something ridiculous like that. And, you know, you would think maybe that if you have a half-sibling like George Obama does, that maybe you might have a little help coming your way, and that maybe you wouldn't have to – maybe you would not necessarily automatically become a citizen, even though you have been an illegal immigrant like Aunt Satuzzi or whatever her name is, the one who Obama's aunt that has been living in Boston for the last how many years as an illegal immigrant. Oh, and then who can forget Uncle Omar, who was arrested on a DWI charge, who has been living in this country illegally for 40 years. You know, so it's all in who you know, and it's all who you're related to. But apparently that does not carry over. It's not an international thing with the Obama family. It does not carry over to poor George Obama, who's living in a hut on a dollar a day. But for anyone who has seen this movie and anyone who has seen the interview with George Obama, he's an extremely intelligent guy. He's very articulate, and he pretty much said what he thought and pretty much, you know, said what he had to say. D'Souza also has a film coming out this July 4th called America, which is also being co-produced by Mullen. And also what Gerald Mullen, his co-producer, says is what's basically is going on here is that D'Souza is being singled out for minor violations. If there is any violation, it is minor in nature, and that it's very similar to the IRS's targeting of Tea Party groups. And so that has just come about. It remains to be seen. I know that Dinesh D'Souza did turn himself in to authorities, and he was let out on bail today, I believe, on about $2,500 bail. So he has turned himself in and has since been released. But he is fully cooperating with the authorities, and so we will continue to see what happens with this story, because this is just now coming to light and just now coming out. But Gerald Mullen also added, and you know, I don't know that there's any one of us that can, at this point, when we see what is going on with people who are deemed, for all intents and purposes, they're deemed enemies of the state and enemies of the government. Gerald Mullen said, when American citizens begin to suspect that people are being arrested for alleged minor violations because of their vocal dissent against their elected representatives or rulers, it breeds disrespect and contempt for the law and suspicion of those officials. If this unfortunate action against Dinesh is intended to deter the release of his upcoming film, America, that effort will fail. And to that I say, you go, Dinesh. You do what you got to do to get that movie out and get it out there so that people can see what's going on, so that you can tell the story that the media and other outlets are not going to report and they're not going to tell. And in keeping with the story of Dinesh D'Souza here, well, the IRS has been pretty busy lately. You know, for everyone who is getting ready to file their tax return, well, the IRS may not have a whole lot of time for you because they are pretty busy targeting conservatives. Not only are they targeting Tea Party groups, and they're targeting conservative filmmakers like Dinesh D'Souza, well, they're also targeting Hollywood conservatives. And This is from Newsmax. This has also just come out recently, between yesterday and today. There is a group in Hollywood. It's a group of Hollywood conservatives. And let's just say right off the top here that we all know if you are conservative in Hollywood, if you're a guy like Bruce Willis, if you're a guy like Clint Eastwood, you've got enough of your own money that, let's face it, you don't really have to give a rat's ass what those other people think about you, because you have your own production company and you have your own money. You have enough of your own money to do things and produce things and distribute them the way you want to do it. But there is a group, a small group of Hollywood conservatives. They have formed a group called Friends of Abe, Abe being standing for Abe Lincoln. And what this group is, like I said, it's a group, small group of actors, directors, producers, things like that, people who work in Hollywood, and they get together. Basically, they get together to be with people of like mind, and they get together and they have dinner or they have drinks or they have, they get together at someone's house or, they just get together just to hang out and be together and talk about their beliefs and talk about the things that are going on in the country right now and talk to other people who believe the way that they believe. And Friends of Abe now has come under scrutiny by the IRS after the federal agency requested information about its meetings with politicians, including 2012 vice presidential candidate Representative Paul Ryan, former Michigan Rep. Thaddeus Cotter, and 2012 presidential hopeful Herman Cain. So what they did is this group would, they would invite some of these people to speak at some of their get-togethers. And this organization was launched about 10 years ago. And one of the most important things that this group does for the people who are in it is they protect their identity. Because, again, we all know what happens to people who come out as being conservative in Hollywood. They find it's not a lot of work to be had for them. Imagine that. It bans cameras at any sort of meetings or events or anything that they hold. Now there are people in this group who are very public about it, who including Gary Sinise, who does, we all know Gary Sinise does amazing work for our troops and for our veterans. Kramer star Kelsey Grammer, John Voight. They are all openly conservative. In a 2008 interview here about the group with singer Pat Boone for the Washington Times, Pat Boone said it's a growing movement and word is getting out that there's many of us in this business. At the time he was one of the few conservative stars who would speak out publicly about this that of the existence of this group. And also, Clint Howard, who's the brother of Ron Howard, he is a director, basically, actor and director. He says that conservatives are still outcasts who have trepidations that their political orientation in a sea of outspoken liberals will sink their career. So they know, it's a well-known fact that this goes on. And Jeremy Boring, who is the executive director of Friends of Abe, says that the organization has absolutely no political agenda, and it basically exists, like I said, to create some fellowship and some feeling that there are some kindred spirits among Hollywood's conservatives. And again, one of their main focuses is that they do what they need to do to keep the identities of the members of this group a secret. And which really, again, see the theme running through all of these stories? The theme running through all of these stories is freedom and liberty and free speech and free thinking and free thought. And the IRS now, not only it continues to target conservative groups, whether they're targeting Dinesh D'Souza, if Dinesh did something illegal and there are some violations here, I think that he's probably going to be the first person to man up and say that he did so and do what he needs to do to rectify that. Is it a coincidence that guys like Dinesh D'Souza and groups like Friends of Abe are being targeted under this administration by this IRS? I just I don't know. I just I don't see how it can be anything but. Now, if it turns out that it is not, that there is nothing political about it, that there is no agenda, then okay, then we'll take it from there and we will see where the investigations lead. But it's just, you know, I don't think I'm the only one here when I say I smell a rat. There's something dark and something sinister about the whole thing. And but we will see where these investigations lead and see if they lead anywhere at all. There's another interesting story here this week going on in Texas. There is a woman who is, well, she's been declared brain dead. Her husband found her unconscious. They believe that she had a blood clot. She is 14 weeks pregnant, and her husband and her family have requested that she be taken off life support, and the hospital in Fort Worth, Texas, has refused to do this. And they are refusing to do this based on the fact that she is pregnant. It says that a judge today ordered the hospital to remove life support. Her family, of course, says that she would not want to be kept alive in this condition. This woman's name is Marlies Munoz. She is a patient right now at John Peter Smith Hospital in Fort Worth. Oops, HIPAA. The hospital has until 5 p.m. on Monday to remove the life support. We don't know at this point whether or not there will be any legal appeals of this decision. The hospital and the family both agree that she has met the criteria to under Texas law to be considered brain dead and medically clinically dead. Doctors say that the fetus could not be born alive at this point. But the hospital has not pronounced her dead, and they are continuing to treat her over the objections of her husband and her family. Again, I think this is also, you know, this is a very similar case to the California teenager who was being kept alive. Well, it's the same, but it's opposite. Her family has requested that she be kept alive, and the hospital was trying to take her off life support. And I think that in this era of the technology that we possess today, that you know, we may see more and more of these cases. They used to be kind of few and far between. A lot of people can remember the Karen Ann Quinlan case back in the 70s. That was really kind of the precedent that started for a lot of these cases. And again, there was Terry Schiavo several years ago in Florida. And, you know, I think that there are probably a lot of opinions floating around about these end-of-life situations, especially in this case where you have a woman who's pregnant. You know, I think it will be very interesting, not only in the case of Marlies Munoz here, but also in the case of young Jahi McMath in California, who's only 13 years old, and went into the hospital for a routine tonsillectomy, and long story short, right now today, she is also, the doctors are saying that she is brain dead. But I think that maybe that all we can do at this point is send our positive thoughts and prayers to both of these families and hope that this situation turns out the best way that it can for everyone involved. And you know, like I said, I think our hearts go out to this woman's family that they have to deal with such a horrific situation. But kind of in keeping with female issues, if you want to really kind of go out on a limb from that story to this one, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee is taking some heat also this week for some comments he made about women at the Republican meetings that went on this week, and here's just a little bit of that.
Women I know are outraged that the Democrats think that women are nothing more than helpless and hopeless creatures whose only goal in life is to have the government provide for them birth control medication. Women I know are smart, educated, intelligent, capable of doing anything that anyone else can do, Our party stands for the recognition of the equality of women and the capacity of women. That's not a war on them. It's a war for them. And if the Democrats want to insult the women of America by making them believe that they are helpless without Uncle Sugar coming in and providing for them a prescription each month for birth control because they cannot control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of the government, then so be it. Let us take that discussion all across America, because women are far more than the Democrats have played them to be, and women across America need to stand up and say, enough of that nonsense.
Okay, the thing that Governor Huckabee is catching some heat about, I think, is that he used the word libido. That's the only thing. I've heard this clip now several times, and the only thing that I can think of is giving people the willies and freaking them out is the use of the word libido. Everything that he said in this quote is right on. I mean, we all know that Democrats like to put people – they like to put people in groups. They like to put people in different groups. You have African-Americans over here. You have women over here. You have Hispanics over here. You have gay people over here. So everybody's in a little box, and everybody's in a little corner. And – for some reason, Democrats think that the only issues that American women are interested in are the issues of birth control and how to get the American people to pay for that birth control. And it's like they think that women are nothing more than body parts. And I'm in complete agreement with Governor Huckabee here that American women should be outraged by the fact that we are thought of as nothing more than body parts by the Democratic Party, and that the only thing that we think of is how can I get the American people to buy me free birth control. It's just, I really wish that more American women, and I know that the statistics are that women in general, I know definitely single women, I don't think it's the case for married women. I think married women do tend to vote more Republican. I wish more single women would see the light on this issue and take a second look at the Republican Party, because what's going on here is that you are being thought of as just a bag of body parts, and that your only thought, you're not worried about jobs, you're not worried about the economy, you're not worried about education for your children. All you're worried about is free birth control. And it's insulting when you think it's downright insulting. And I just don't understand why more women don't see that. And I think the general thinking right now is that maybe Mike Huckabee is considering another run at the presidency. There's a lot of time between now and 2016, so we will see whether or not that pans out or not, whether or not that's actually true. But even if he is, presidential candidates make slip-ups all the time, and 2 years from now, I don't think that anybody is going to remember that Mike Huckabee used the word libido at a Republican dinner. So, we will see what happens with that. I think this is one of those things that the left is probably going to yell and scream and squawk about it for a day or two, and as Rush likes to call him, I do so love to pay so much homage to the great Rush Limbaugh here, because he's the one who started all this, and he is the one who very aptly named them the drive-by media. So they'll be interested in Mike Huckabee for a day or two, and then they will drive on down the road and find someone else to attack and find someone else to make the center of their negative attention. So we will see what happens with that. But right now... It's time for WTF, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Yes, it is time for what the, well, you know, everybody pick a word and pick a word that you like. Just throw it in there and we'll go from there. But anyway, here first on the list in the WTF segment tonight is that everyone's favorite crack-smoking mayor, Rob Ford. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. Well, maybe we could, but apparently they love him in Toronto. Well, Rob Ford has something he can brag about now, is that his approval numbers are higher than President Barack Obama. That's right. Rob Ford now is up to a 47% approval rating, and President Obama is down to 42.5%. So there is something that Rob Ford can be proud of, that he has higher approval ratings when he's either been drinking or he's been smoking crack than President Obama. So there is that. Also, we had this week Michelle Obama. Well, Michelle Obama is the first lady. She, I'm sure, is well aware that she is a role model to many girls and young women. But Michelle Obama also has her own role models. And one of her favorite role models is Jane Fonda because, well, she's so politically savvy. And I don't know that Michelle Obama has ever seen any pictures of Jane Fonda sitting on a North Vietnamese anti-aircraft battery, but she might want to Google that and look it up because it is something that she might want to see. And when Vietnam veterans were understandably upset and outraged about this and called Hanoi Jane, which, you know her, you love her. She is Hanoi Jane to a lot of us and to a lot of Vietnam veterans. She told them that they were hypocrites and that maybe they should get a life. And that is your First Lady, the First Lady of the United States. That, folks, is her role model. Hanoi Jane Fonda is Michelle Obama's role model. So just so we know that, just so that is, Also in Great Britain, there is a Chinese company, I believe. It's a Spanish toy maker. Has come out with a doll called Nanuko Won't Eat. And basically what happens is when a little girl, and she's playing with her doll, she puts the spoon with food up to the baby's mouth, the baby will turn their head away. And a lot of people are saying that perhaps this promotes anorexic concepts to little girls at an early age. It ties in with a few weeks ago, Mattel was wondering whether or not that they should make a plus-size Barbie. And a lot of people were saying, well, maybe not so much plus-size, but how about just normal measurement size Barbie with normal measurements and what looks like a normal body and not the totally off-the-wall measurements that normal Barbie dolls have. There also is a Florida man who was jailed for attacking his disabled uncle in the head, beating him over the head with a toilet seat. And let's see. He's 20 years old, Sammy Lee Johnson, 48-year victim, that his nephew, he was watching TV, just came up and struck him with the toilet seat. Never a dull moment there in Florida. Anyway, that is your WTF segment for this evening. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. We will be off next week. I will be at a fundraiser with none other than 2012 presidential candidate Herman Cain. He will be there on behalf of Erica Harold, who is running in the 13th Congressional District in Illinois. I will have plenty to talk about that. So with that, I will see everyone in 2 weeks. Please look where everything started at conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Look for me on Facebook at facebook.com/BeckyNoble, on Twitter at PatriotWish, and now at WayneDupree.com, News Ninja. I am going to be having lots of writings there. So thanks for listening tonight. Thanks for dropping by, and see you next time.